The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we are taking you to the greatest city in the world to cover the worst Democratic primary in the world. I'm talking about the New York City mayoral primary, which is quickly turning into a choice between Andrew Cuomo, who in a sane world would be living in a cabin off the grid right now, and Zohran Mamdani, a socialist state assemblyman who is too much even for my colleague and card-carrying pinko friend, Jonathan Last. There are six other statistically significant candidates right now, but ranked choice voting probably makes this a two-person race. We're going to talk about that more later on. My guest today is Harry Siegel, senior editor at The City, a nonprofit New York City news outlet, columnist at New York Daily News, and co-host of the weekly podcast FAQ NYC. Harry, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
These are my favorite podcasts that we do when I have somebody I don't know, because I do a lot of these with like my pals or people in national world or whatever. But when we have a local race and a person locally who's following it super closely, who's going to teach us about all the dynamics that we need to understand this horrible, horrible race. So I'm going to start with this. The New York Times editorial board ran an editorial this week that made clear they preferred Andrew Cuomo to Zohran Mamdani, but wouldn't explicitly call for people to rank Cuomo on their ballots. Now, you called this, and I liked this, pathetically mealy-mouthed. Also, it's like kind of indicative of how a lot of people, including yourself, are feeling about this race. So lay this race out for me about what's going on.
There's an awful lot happening, and a lot of it is very stupid and frustrating. So here's the top line. Generally, the Democratic primary is the whole show in New York, where there's like roughly a billion Democrats to every registered Republican. There's a bunch of independents, but the primaries are closed. So only Democrats decide on their candidate. And then in the last three elections, that person cruises in the general, whether they're up against somebody serious or not, because after Giuliani and then Bloomberg, so 20 years of non-Democratic mayors in a very overwhelmingly Democratic city, it's like, this is the deal. This is the big show. However, this Democratic primary, to say what's gross about these people in a slightly different way than you did, sir, has a guy who the Democratic Party purged and pushed out of office, who resigned and now says he was forced out before he could have been impeached and then would not have been allowed with New York's impeachment laws to run again, against a socialist with no interest whatsoever in the Democratic Party except as a vehicle. And that's who we're deciding on to be the Democratic standard bearer in, as you mentioned, a crowded and ranked choice election. What's significant here is it doesn't matter that much, because the thing is, it is extremely likely that both Andrew Cuomo and Zohran Mamdani, the reliable outside polling that's measuring like a week ago, and it's been a crazy week, shows Cuomo is still up by like maybe 10 points, 12, depending on what you look at the end of ranked choice voting. Mamdani has a ton of momentum, a lot of money, brilliant messaging. He's hoping to close that gap. You know, AOC and Bernie Sanders, all that, we'll see. But whatever happens, they're both going to run in the general. And in the general, there's no ranked choice. So you can make a good case for ranked choice. You cannot make a good case for having ranked choice in your primaries, but not your generals. And everyone squinted past this because it's like, well, the primary is really the whole election most of the time here, except it's not this year. We haven't mentioned Eric Adams yet. He's the sullied, scuzzy incumbent mayor who swore up and down every which way that he was going to run as a Democrat and he was going to show everyone after cutting a deal, as it's been widely and correctly perceived, with Donald Trump to aid in immigration enforcement in exchange for having criminal charges against him dropped involving corruption. But Eric Adams swore he was going to run as a Democrat. And then on the last possible day when you had to hand in your petitions and signatures, he said, actually, I'm running as an independent. So doing that kept a lot of other people from entering the Democratic primary. Andrew Cuomo's looming. There's an incumbent mayor there. He's saying, do you really want to run against the city's second black mayor? Like very openly and explicitly. So this all makes for a bizarre field. We'll get through this dumb primary. It will get lots of dumb attention. It will matter for how the candidates are positioned, but it'll be the same candidates either way for a five-way race where whoever wins the most votes wins. And so you have Curtis Sliwa, who some listeners will remember of the Guardian Angels. He's a radio talker. He's had a very complicated personal life. He has a lot of alimony and child support. He is, again, the Republican nominee. He is a very smart man. He is not a serious man or a serious candidate, but it might not matter in this race. On the left, presumably, you'll have Zohran Mamdani running possibly as the Democrat and also on the Working Families Party line, which they're holding for him in the event he does not win the Democratic primary. And then in the middle, you'll have Andrew Cuomo, the disgraced former governor, corrupt ex-cop Eric Adams, cutting deals with the Trump administration, and this guy, Jim Walden, who's an interesting guy, a serious lawyer, like a real person, but has no experience in government. No one's ever heard of him, hoping that maybe he emerges as the alternative. And to win this race, you'll need like, what, 20-something percent of the vote, maybe 30%. So you're going to have a primary that's ridiculous, only open to registered Democrats with ranked choice. Nobody can make much sense of. And then you'll have a general where we'll have something of a haphazard result with three guys in the center competing for the votes. And that's where most of the votes will be there. Everyone who's registered can vote. The Democratic primary, again, if you're not a registered Democrat, all these Bernie people found this out the hard way. Oh, I don't get the vote here? Zohran Mamdani has spent a lot of time encouraging people to sign up and register, to his credit, right? Small D democracy, like knocking on doors, getting new voters out, spreading message. But, you know, he's hoping that that'll be a thumb on the scale for how this turns out. We'll have this primary. Everyone will have a bunch of commentary and punditry. And then we'll be basically back where we started and the real election will begin. And at that point, we can all say this is grim, it's terrible, and it matters. Last thing here for New Yorkers is the good news is if you're agonizing about voting for Mamdani or Cuomo for different reasons, maybe these involve Israel and Jewish things, maybe they involve the respective politics, the 100 million scandals around Andrew Cuomo, I don't have time to do chapter and verse on. And remember, the Trump people get Adams off the hook by saying, you can't have charges this close to an election. And now Adams is calling people up in private and saying, don't get down with Cuomo because the Justice Department investigation, which involves the nursing home scandals, is going to mess him up right when he starts to run. Cuomo's appeal, of course, is largely everyone is fearful of him. Grit your teeth and this is what you got. Get in line now or I'll remember later. These are deeply depressing choices. For the primary, feel free not to rank either. Remember, the stakes are fairly low. But if you really want to signify and decide, do what the Times eventually did. And this is the last piece of my long mouthful here, but there's so much ridiculous stuff happening. The Times decided last year that they were no longer going to endorse in local races. This happened after the paper backed Dan Goldman and I believe The Intercept, and I don't want to get it wrong, but I think The American Prospect ran a long sort of oppo dump story about Goldman's family connections to the Times publisher, A.G. Sulzberger. Wasn't much there. It was like, this Jew went to this elite school while this other Jewish guy was there. You know what this means after the Times endorsed Goldman in that crowded race. And then he's decided quietly, we're not endorsing in local races anymore, which is pathetic because this is where the paper has the most influence. They nearly decided the mayor in 2021, Catherine Garcia, almost upsets Adams after winning by surprise the Times endorsement. A bunch of stuff happens. I'm going to skip over, but they're embarrassed by this. They convene a panel that's like 15 representative New Yorkers, including my podcast co-host, Chrissy Greer. And this is going to be their pseudo endorsement. The panel basically likes Brad Lander. We haven't even brought up to this point, who's lefty, Jewish, wants to present himself as the moderate, reasonable guy now, but just cross-endorsed with Zohran Mamdani. The Times freaks out and then does a non-endorsement editorial thing because they swore they weren't going to endorse this time, being like, we're not saying anything. And all these candidates suck. And it's very depressing and sad. But the one thing you really need to know, like 400 words in, is you can't rank Mamdani. They don't explain the reasoning or anything else. It's mealy-mouthed and ridiculous. And it's basically the owner, maybe with an assist from Mike Bloomberg, who's now given $5 million to Andrew Cuomo's super PAC, overruling their own panel that was meant to hide the cowardice of the paper and the editorial board and promising it wouldn't weigh in anymore and saying, actually, here's what you got to do. So if this all seems messy and incoherent, because it is, and thank God New Yorkers are actually fairly self-sufficient, self-governing people who have survived all sorts of idiot mayors and governors, despite what you may hear Donald Trump say, or, you know, real world Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary, it's no shithole. It's a very pleasant place to be in a lot of ways, despite our political leadership, but it's not doing us any favors.
Harry, whatever things happened that brought you to this podcast, I'm so happy about it. You are great. I'm just going to start there. So let's jump in. We screened our focus groups for this show similarly to the New Jersey show that we did a couple weeks ago. So they're Democrats who are voting in the primary, which usually means they are more plugged into the race than average voters. And this is important because people yelled at me after the New Jersey one where they were like, those voters didn't like Mikey Sherrill and she won. And I was like, yes, because these are deep primary voters who are super plugged in. So they tend to be hyper-partisan. So please, please accept that caveat as you go through this discussion. Okay, so like I said, ranked choice voting has narrowed the field in this race, probably to just two candidates. So it's worth doing a quick primer on what ranked choice voting is. This is where New York City voters can rank their top five choices. And so there's more people than ranks. The candidate with the fewest first place votes is eliminated and their votes are redistributed to their supporters' next choices. And this continues until someone reaches the majority. There were 8 rounds of ranked choice voting in the New York City mayoral race in 2021. Remember, it was like a little bit of a shit show, I guess. So we were wondering how these Democrats were thinking about the race at a 30,000 foot level and what was most important to them. So let's listen to what we heard.
Whether we're talking about the leaders, the media, like it just becomes who has the most money rules the game. And I think that's just what I'm really sick of seeing.
But first of all, is the backbone and the spine to stand up to Washington and everything that's happening that's been reiterated by, you know, a number of people in the call. And the other thing is the economic stance, because, you know, there are candidates that promise all these things, and this is typical of politicians. I promise to do all these things, but who pays for it? You know, I want to reduce taxes. I want to cut costs. But there's an economic cost to it as well that's associated with that.
My biggest selling point will be somebody who is willing to stand up to DC and stand up to Donald Trump, and somebody with experience.
Crime on the sidewalks, crime on the subway, you know, a homeless man stabbed and killed 3 people on the upper First Avenue. I missed it by a very short margin. I was almost at that bus stop where the woman got stabbed. I was one bus stop away and I almost went to that bus stop. Not at the exact moment, but very close. And I say, there but for the grace of God go I, because now I'm terrified of everyone. Like, you're at a bus stop, who's going to pull out a butcher knife? You know, you're walking down the street, you can't be on your phone. I just think the city is just extremely scary. And I've lived here since I'm 22 years old. I'm 73 now. I've never been so frightened on the subway. I've had people chase me on the platform. I mean, it's very frightening. And the people are letting in the homeless people in the subway. And I said to the guy at the toll booth, why are you letting them in? Well, I don't want him to hurt me, he said. So anyway, I'm just worried about us all. We have to be so vigilant. You can't relax. I'm afraid to sit in the park.
I feel a lot safer, as crazy as that sounds, just because of surveillance and things of that nature. But I do think that all this crime at this level in a big city has been occurring consistently over the years. It might have been breaks with leadership, but I feel like it's just documented more. So we see more of it. But I don't really think, at least from my vantage point, that things are any different. I think that New York City is full of that and has always been.
I think the issue that matters the most, to me at least, is crime. I see it more and more every day. I actually got robbed last summer and I was really disheartened by the police. I felt like they did a terrible job. right when they found out where I was, they said, it's because of the neighborhood you were in. I was in Chelsea. I was at a gay bar, but right when they heard the name of the bar, it was over. It was like, yeah, we don't really care. You know, you put yourself in that situation. I was like, I was in Chelsea. Like, this is a very nice neighborhood. Clearly I was targeted. And then when I gave a description, they're like, oh, we can give you like a lineup. And I was like, the person had a mask on. So like, how would that work? And they're like, well, if you know the height and like, I'm like, I can't get someone arrested because they're 6 foot black and slim.
I look at the market rate of what my apartment is, you know, I live in a one bedroom and the market rate is, you know, astronomical, you know, and it's, you know, it's a pre-war building. It's nice, but the market rate shouldn't be like $3,800, you know, either. So those issues, you know, are top of mind, the crime, the petty crime. I mean, I don't, I work from home a lot these days, so I don't commute as much. And when I do commute, you know, I do find there are a lot of folks that do obviously need, you know, mental health and other welfare services and also education.
People were talking about like Washington and Trump, but I think the focus should be really on New York for this election and the quality of life in New York. I think New York is becoming more and more unaffordable. I used to live in the city, now I live in Brooklyn. You know, I don't have to keep on moving further away from where I want to be or from my job.
So crime and housing affordability, these sound like brand new issues in New York. Does that sound right to you that these are the issues defining the election?
It certainly does. I think crime and public safety more broadly, which also encompasses protests and disruptions and traffic deaths sometimes and all that stuff, is always pretty high on people's minds. It's like what the tabloids cover and what they're there for, death sheets in certain ways and all that. Part of what further weirded out this race is that the corrupt mayor is now in his fourth police commissioner. Took less than 3 years, and this one has been reasonably competent. And I've seen anecdotally in the polling to where the center of the conversation has shifted pretty clearly. It's not that crime has gone away or safety concerns, but like affordability, which is like a constant pressure, right? And crime is like a sharp pain, if you will, really seems to be the driving issue now. And you can feel those dynamics and actually how the candidates have evolved over the course of this race. Andrew Cuomo, for instance, came in with a city in crisis appeal that was basically like, you know, outtakes from Taxi Driver. You don't want to walk down the stairs at night because you don't know what's on the other side of them, into the trains, of darkness, grimness. And he's now very much shifted his crisis from crime to Donald Trump, I think, as he's following the polling and the shape of this election. But like, as these issues compete, after a long period where Eric Adams, himself an ex-cop, has constantly assured people the city's turned a corner and things are getting better and has not been believed, the murder number this year is incredibly low. It'll be the lowest in decades if it holds up. But felony assaults are still very elevated, a bunch of other things since before the pandemic, which, of course, Papa Andrew Cuomo, the honorary dad of New York, saw the state through, as he likes to frame all that in his own run. But I felt very much like the voices I heard there sound like the voices I hear all the time and around the city. And if you combine them, it's sometimes the same person sort of shifting what's at the top of their mind. And they're sort of fretting or obsessing or thinking most actively about, just depending on how their own life is going, what they're seeing. And there's no question when some big, terrible thing happens and a guy goes across town, across the city, stabbing people, and the police can't seem to find him. And eventually someone calls him in, and that's what happens. This is all people can think about for some period of time, and that tends to dominate. You know, these are like common urban nightmares. If you live in a very dense space, you think a little like, I don't want to fall in front of a train. And if someone is shoved in front of a train, that can dominate even when the numbers are pretty good. This is nothing like the New York 70s, but this continues to be one of the leading concerns. I think at this point it's behind both affordability and standing up to this federal government, which interestingly is getting closer and closer to like direct clashes between layers of law enforcement everywhere except New York, where the mayor has a special deal with the president. His top cronies in the department are golfing with him and like cutting side deals to keep the military out of New York on golf courses with Trump, according to the reporting of the New York Post, which I trust here because it's like Trump's house paper. These are very weird times, and those are very much the litany of concerns on people's minds. And lastly, the mood is grim. Is the city going in the right direction? Numbers haven't been above 25% in several years now. And even if the economy is sort of stabilized or the crime numbers are plateaued or starting to go down, there's a feeling that something isn't right that nobody has managed to get a handle on, except to some extent, Zora Mamdani, who's running a super optimistic, we can have more of everything. Many more things will be free. Your life will be easier. The city will be more affordable. We'll treat people more decently. In premise, at least, is wonderful. Like, who would be against any of that? But, you know, if you start thinking whatsoever seriously about it, raises some gigantic questions about the practicality of it passing and the expenses it would create if so. I'm more worried about the first, because I don't think we'd ever get to the second.
You mentioned Trump, and there was a through line through the groups where there was this, like, I want them to stand up to Trump. You know, I want to be able to fight back. But here's the thing. New York City led the urban shift toward Donald Trump in the last presidential election. He got 30% of the vote there in 2024 after 18% in 2016 and 23% in 2020. Why do you think that is?
Percentages lie here. I work in a newsroom, so I spend all sorts of time thinking about charts. What happened is, I'm going to start with Al Sharpton. The guys of my youth, who I assume by the time I was a grown man would be long forgotten. Curtis Lee was there too, Rudy Giuliani, and they just never went away. It's weird. Maybe there's something to do with the internet or something. I don't know. But Al Sharpton kept shrinking the Democratic Party around him while his own base remained steady. And people forget he actually, and before he ran for president, ran for mayor himself in a non-ranked choice Democratic primary, came this close to forcing a runoff, running against the Democrat to challenge Giuliani in his reelection thing. And he actually decided not to do a runoff because his plan was to flex his political power, not that he actually wanted to be mayor. This brings us to Donald Trump, and they, of course, share an advisor in Roger Stone, who advised Al Sharpton in his presidential run in 2004, now mostly forgotten, but it was brilliant. He hijacked all the TV time, figured out how to use the debates to his advantage with Stone's advice, and like sort of set a template up for the TV hijacker candidate. Trump has a lot of that, Andrew Yang. But to get back to Trump in New York, listen, he didn't get any more votes. The same number of people turned out for him. People who'd shown up in the last two elections with him on the ballot for the Democrat just stayed home. They said, I don't like any of these people. Forget about it. And that is his percentage increase. He did not get bigger. He shrank the pool around him here as more people just felt like, this is too depressing. These choices are not viable to me. Didn't vote for Trump, didn't vote for the Democrat, and disappeared.
Interesting.
That is why his gains are as substantial as they are. And there's absolutely a different and more Trumpy energy. The city feels like less of a total bubble. And it's the only place I've ever lived or known. I'm an American on paper, but I live in this 51st state on my little island. It's what I'm used to. It's what I know. But there's an exhaustion with what the Democratic Party has provided and how it can deliver. People have not become red-pilled, are not becoming MAGA people necessarily, although some people have those things happen, who just say, forget about this, or I simply can't either way.
Got it. Once the temperatures started rising, I realized I was back in the same worn-out rotation. Same tank top, same shorts, same everything. So I gave my daily uniform an upgrade with Quince. Their pieces are easy, elevated, and somehow make me feel more put together without even trying. And I love not trying. For instance, you'll find 100% European linen shorts and dresses from $30, Italian leather platform, sandals, and so much more. The best part? Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. And I also like things that are cheap. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I also like things to be ethical. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middleman, Quince gives you luxury without the markup. I got my favorite leather jacket from Quince. It's too hot to wear it right now, but it is my go-to piece of clothing when it's cool out. And now I'm using them to upgrade my garden party attire for this summer. Because anyone around Washington, D.C. knows how unbearable outdoor summer functions here can be if you're not dressed properly for them. It's a swamp, literally. So treat your closet to a little summer glow up with Quince. Go to quince.com/thefocusgroup for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/thefocusgroup to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/thefocusgroup. All right. I want to talk about Andrew Cuomo. When he resigned as governor in August of 2021, I think most of us, at least outside of New York, assumed we were done seeing that guy's mug. Instead, much like Donald Trump, he's now the front runner to be the next mayor of New York City. You may wonder how voters came around on him, in spite of his history of sexual harassment and his role in sending COVID-positive patients into nursing homes. Well, the voters told us. Let's listen.
I have seen a shift in the city in the last 5 years, and it's going to take a long time to revert back. Although I like Cuomo's experience, he comes with a lot of baggage, and we really should, on a global scale, not just the local elections, look at funding and limit how much private donors they can receive because they're not governing for us.
I'm leaning towards Cuomo personally because I know he's done it before, and also because I know some of the people personally that were involved in his scandals. I'm involved with local politics. I've been with HK Dem since it was the McManus Club. I mean, I'm talking about since I was 18 years old. So I know some of his accusers, and I mean, I've been lied to by some of them. So I do give him a lot more grace than a lot of people who are not personally involved. I don't know him personally, but I know that he knows how to throw down and he knows the ins and outs of government. And I think that when he left the way he did that because he was putting the city itself and the state before his own personal interests, which is something that I'd like to see in more politicians. This is allergies. I'm not getting choked up. I'm not crying over Andrew Cuomo. You know?
I've been embarrassed. Yesterday, I was with Gen Z people. They were all like 21. They're all Zoran. They all love him. I actually have a lot of respect for him, and I'm a Jew. I don't think he's anti-Semitic. I don't. I think he's pro-people, period. And I think he's a good guy. My only problem with him, I hate to sound like an old fart, we're in a really bad situation here. This is not the time to bring on a kumbaya guy who promises free buses and free subways. That is not the issue right now. We need someone to beat the hell out of Trump. I'm probably going to pull the lever for Cuomo because you know what? During COVID, he kept me from killing myself. And I know he's flawed. He's very flawed. But I think he can do it. I think he's going to stand up to Trump and give him the middle finger. And that's what we're lacking right now.
I'm leaning towards voting for Cuomo. I think he was a very effective governor. I liked a lot of the stuff that he did, especially in terms of, you know, like infrastructure improvements. I think he's been able to get things done. He was governor, you know, during Trump's last administration. And, you know, he wanted to go toe-to-toe. And I think he's going to once again. I think he's going to be effective. And people are talking about like freezing rent and stuff like that. It's just like, I don't really think it's realistic.
I do have more negative to say than positive about Cuomo. But I think that ultimately that's how most people's mindset is going to be with like, okay, at least we know him. At least we know his brother. We know the family name. And not everybody is as privy or informed or knowledgeable about his true past.
I mean, I'm going for Cuomo because he's being realistic about what needs to be done. And he's been in the position. And yes, there are past scandals. Please, if we're going to dig into every candidate's scandals, every politician's scandals, it's going to be a laundry list of God knows what kind of dirt. And I don't necessarily, I'm not, you know, forgiving those or saying that those are not wrong. But we just need someone to lead this damn city to be the greatest city in the world, as we've always been.
Okay, Harry, I got to tell you, I do lots and lots of focus groups. I do tons with Trump voters, and those voters sounded exactly like Trump voters, explaining why, despite all of Trump's flaws, they still got to vote for him. So here's my question for you. The real streak in my focus groups when we were leading up to Trump was sort of a nostalgia for the first Trump, like 2018 economy. Were things really good under Cuomo pre-COVID? Like, is that nostalgia there for him too? Or is it just like devil you know stuff?
It's definitely some of both. New York has had a very shaky and unsteady recovery and a much worse dip under Cuomo. And he shut everything down and required everyone to wear masks and all this stuff. without getting into any of that, it took the city a lot longer to recover than the country at large or most places. The crime numbers are just recovering now, long after the rest of the nation, you know, corrected whatever spikes had occurred. So prior to that, before the pandemic, weirdly, Cuomo is sort of the guy who is there before the Cuomo who sort of messed things up and also passed a whole series of criminal justice reforms, starting with bail reform that are still getting widely fought over and fought out. And that he's now saying they didn't do this the right way. They went too far, but the spirit of what I did was right. You know, I was right all along and the lefties messed it up, which is always where he ends up. Yeah, he sounds a lot like Trump. There's a lot of Trump tone in people who are supporting him. And in some ways, there's also this question of whether this is like a hold on or a change election, right? The people want to dream big and compare Mamdani to Obama, and we can have more and better in our politics. And younger voters overwhelmingly are like, look at these old worn out creeps. Why can't we do better? And I get that as a question. You know, CYA usually stands for one thing with politicians. I think for a lot of voters, it's like, consider your alternatives. And there is the, yeah, everyone has scandals. How much worse could he be? Line. At least he's a proven quality. Thank you. And are these all triple crime people in your focus groups? I'll explain.
Yeah.
So voters in New York who voted in the last three primaries get referred to as triple crime voters. And like, you know, they're going to turn out.
They have not all voted in the last three primaries. Not all of them.
Check. A whole part of Mamdani's theory is political pros in New York almost always focus on triple prime voters who have voted in like the last three primaries.
Yeah.
Because the theory is not that many young people show up. It's sort of a known universe. Like, you almost know what the denominator is and thus what number you got to get to. And his theory is I could bring new people in and that changes the math and could change it bigly. And like, he has these volunteers who are door knocking all over the city. And these people are like really enthusiastic and they felt totally cut off from our politics at this point. So the ones who are a little older, first by Bloomberg, he was ultra wealthy and sort of paid New Yorkers to check out of their own affairs in a bunch of ways. Like, traditionally, politicians get bribed. He was bribing politicians to sort of bend politics in his direction. And then when the Democratic establishment finally came back, they were so eager to do business. This didn't feel open and appealing. It felt like very fakes, posters and signifying from de Blasio in particular. And Mamdani, tonally at least, is drawing a ton of new energy in. And of course, he's exaggerating this. And he wants to take every internet sign of success and look at how many doors we've knocked and exaggerate this because perception to some extent is reality. He's succeeded in having this perceived as a two-person race, which is very helpful to him. And to go back to where you started, part of why these alternatives seem unappealing to many New Yorkers, including you, me, the Times editorial board, and people who are watching the race, all these sort of more normal candidates with more detailed policies, like within the existing sphere of reality, but who are not the three-term ex-governor, or like the super bright young kid whose only accomplishment in elected office to this point legislatively was a free bus pilot program. And this is like liberals and liberalism at their worst. There's a pilot program somewhere. We can expand this thing 1,000-fold. We've scientifically proven it. What could go wrong? And it's ridiculous. And that's taken a lot of people who don't love Cuomo. We're going to hold their nose and pull for him. And if the polls hold up, that is going to be enough in the Democratic primary with only those registered voters, right? Not even like Republicans and independents to see him through at least this phase of the election. We'll see.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Okay, I want to move on to Zohran Mamdani, the 33-year-old Democratic Socialist State Assemblyman, What he lacks in experience, he makes up for in big ideas. Some call them ambitious. I call them crazy, fantastical, whatever. As you just said, they include eliminating bus fares, freezing rent on rent-stabilized apartments, and opening a series of city-run grocery stores. Let's listen to how voters talk about Mamdani.
We have a choice between big money politics or Mamdani, who just has no impressive or otherwise legislative experience promising the moon. I think we're going to be back in a situation which would make the current situation worse, which is less police presence on the subway, more taxation.
New York City is too big of a place, too complicated of a place to have somebody who's had nothing, who hasn't led, you know, even a Boy Scout troop. And I really don't even know his name.
It's funny how a lot of people are saying lack of experience. So experience, as much as, yes, I'd love for politics for people to have experience going in and knowing how systems work. That's sort of not how it works anymore. I find he is a voice of the people. I appreciate his campaign on wealth inequality. The rent is too damn high. And it feels like he's getting momentum. He's speaking to the people. And he feels like a voice that would stand up to corporations and to Trump and fight against them. And we need like fighters right now. We need people to fight them in court. We need people to fight them in politics, whatever the systems are.
He does have a lot of like interesting policies and agendas that he wants to work on that I agree with in theory, but I'm worried that he will fall flat by promising too much, not being able to deliver. And after being in the private sector of business for so many years and then seeing how the city works, I found it like a fourth grade level. And I hate to say it like that, but I could see opportunity for this person to come in and try, because the way that local government is organized, it's not that intelligible. You know, let's try the voice of the people. If it doesn't work, at least we said we tried, right?
My biggest concern is that he's promising the world and he's just not going to be able to deliver. Everything he says, I'm like, you know what? That's a great policy. That's a great policy. But is it realistic? And I don't think it is. Like freezing the rent, that's only on rent-stabilized apartments. So that would just be for 10th or 20% of the city. I was just talking to someone who lives in a luxury building and they were saying, oh, you're going to freeze the rent. That doesn't apply to you. The other issue with him is I was just reading about how if someone jumps the turnstile or goes in without paying, he said that's not a crime and shouldn't be punishable. So that really worries me, because is anyone going to pay? And the MTA is already losing money.
Yeah, I like him because I see a lot of like outward leftism in him, and not many of the other candidates have that. I consider myself kind of one of them, so I like it when leftists get their way into the Democratic Party and stuff, and I really like his ideas. I think they're small enough that they might be able to work.
Like some of his plans might extend past like the power of what a mayor can do. But I do appreciate like how ambitious they are. And I do appreciate him like fighting for these things. And if you aim high and you're compromising in the middle, I think it's still like a good place to be.
I like him because he's not as like beholden to corporate donors or other large donors in the way that other like more establishment Democrat candidates might be. And I also feel like he's very focused on like just the people that live in the city, like making New York affordable for like actual New Yorkers. I feel like it's just becoming even more and more unaffordable.
I was very impressed with his stance and his confidence. And I believe that he will come in bells ringing and just blazing ahead. I just liked everything about him, every idea he had. And of course, I don't know that he can really do these things. It seemed kind of like a fairy tale, but like I like fairy tales, sometimes they come true. I think I'm an optimist at heart, but I'm also more skeptical than I've ever been in my entire life. So I'm adopting that part of me.
That last voter gets me, man. It seems like kind of a fairy tale, but I like fairy tales. Like us optimists, you know, we want to believe. But you wrote about your experience interviewing Mamdani and said that his circular argument for how he'll accomplish all of his grand promises is to look at how successful his campaign has been. And it does seem, to be fair, quite well executed, especially from a media, kind of social media perspective. But you also said you didn't think Mamdani should or will be the next mayor. But you said that his skeptics should consider why he's bringing new people and fresh air into the city's often chokingly stale politics. So, two-part question. How has his campaign been successful? And what has historically made New York City politics stale?
So we've had sort of accidental left-wing candidates, to some extent centrist ones, for a few cycles where different weird events have intervened. There was a woman, Diane Morales, running last time who also had excellent posters and was generating a great deal of enthusiasm from younger voters and the left. And she was not super well informed on some issues, was my experience from interviewing her. She had a meltdown where her staff tried to organize. And she fought this, which is very complicated when you're in that position. And a bunch of other things went horribly wrong. And the result of all this was this very late panic where Maya Wiley, who finished second in the first round of ranked choice voting and eventually third, ended up as the emergency pick of the left very, very late. And AOC endorsed her very late. And she came in, by the way, pretty late this time around. And this is all weird and confusing. Mamdani, by contrast, is like really smart guy. Preternaturally gifted communicator. This isn't just social media tricks. He's impressive directly on a screen, the people who are representing him in a room. Like, he's smart and interesting, and he did well enough that he sort of got all these second-tier success effects, where people wanted to book him because he'd do something that made a bit of news, and then people wanted to book him because he was trending and interesting. People start volunteering, then other people want to be there because it feels like a scene or a moment, and those things are exciting. And then a lot of this sort of generates its own momentum and frustrated other candidates who sort of had a different strategy and were pulling some of their punches where he wasn't and waiting to emerge late. No one's going to pay attention until the end. Do we need to save until we go up on television? And while they were waiting, he pushed through. The question remains in New York, if there's some ceiling in these primaries or in general elections on fairly far left candidates. And actually, the policies that came up in your focus groups with Mamdani in a lot of ways, like free buses, I think are sort of reasonable and smaller bore in some ways. Rent stabilized stock is like half the city's stock. De Blasio froze that several times. Maybe that's caused deferred issues for landlords they're dealing with now. But he also says all the other candidates talk about housing plans that involve zoning changes and finding new land and what developers can do. His is like, the city's going to build 200,000 units of union-built new housing, like we're the federal government. It's incredibly expensive and ambitious, basically free childcare for all, basically all ages. Like, these are vast things. De Blasio had pre-K, and that was his signature thing, and a tax hike for it. He didn't get the tax hike, but he got the money from Cuomo and Albany for that one thing. You know, Politico estimates Mamdani's promises would cost 20 times what that cost. Those are incredible, baffling numbers. And then lastly, and this is too much to get into in full, there are these massive shifts with the Democratic Party involving Israel. And Mamdani, whose supporters are suddenly like, it's not fair. They keep asking about Israel. Why are Cuomo and these other people obsessed with this? And by the way, I do think Cuomo is in unhealthy ways obsessed with this and has used Jews to his political advantage, and sometimes very cynically. But Mamdani's origin story in politics, as he tells it, and he's a very gifted storyteller. These are not accidents, right? His father's a chaired anti-colonial professor at Columbia. Is the BDS is what led him into politics, that this is the great moral crusade, and he won't frame it quite this way. Like, he won't say defund the police, while sort of making clear where his interests are there. But he thinks the idea of having Israel as a Jewish state is fundamentally racist and poisonous in ways I don't think he'd apply to any other country, region, or area. He's utterly committed to the idea that it has to be delegitimized, boycotted, sanctioned, removed from global life. He said he'll arrest Netanyahu if he sets foot in New York, citing a treaty that the U.S. isn't even party to. And I think he's gotten a tremendous pass on those ideas because amongst cosmopolitan, more secular Jews, right? And the Orthodox Jewish vote is a different story there, who play a significant role in New York City's politics. And we have the most, you know, Jews of any city in the world outside of Israel, a million voters here. And he has gotten a pass. As people have squinted past this because they don't like Netanyahu. They're uncomfortable with him, with his sorts of alignments with Trump. They're very upset about Trump. And this nice young guy who's challenging all those things, they don't want to think too hard about what he's saying. But when you stop and do this, and he just got into a bunch, really for the first time, because he was defending the phrase globalize the intifada at some length and mentioning that the Holocaust Museum had used the word intifada at some point. The idea that New York City is going to elect someone who's going to run the police department here, where we've had really big protests and police abuses, significant ones in some of these protests, and sometimes police letting people run riot, so to speak, figuratively or literally, somebody who says globalize the intifada is a fine idea and a concept in charge of maintaining public order is a little bonkers. It is helpful that Trump is very bonkers and these bounds are getting tested in all directions. Brad Lander, the leading Jewish candidate in the race, Mamdani would be the first Muslim mayor. Andrew Cuomo, of course, is Italian and wants to run on an anti-Semitism platform. You can make up all that what you will. And some of it seems very opportunistic to me. But, you know, Brad Lander just got arrested going to an immigration court for the third time. And this is not a work or a kabuki exactly, but it was certainly his plan to spotlight the crazy stuff that's happening there with federal agents from different agencies that sometimes you can figure out, oh, that one's with Treasury, that one's with ICE. And sometimes you just can't, with masks on, in a public building, waiting to snatch people up outside of courtrooms. So he came in with the intent of getting arrested. He did, and he keeps talking about this as free speech. Obviously, what they actually mean is civil disobedience. He locked arms with somebody they were trying to arrest, didn't let go. So like blocking a van, he's stopping these federal agents from doing what they're doing. And that might be very righteous. I happen to think it very much is. But it's also purposeful, meant to draw attention both to this cause and to his campaign. And these guys won't answer simple, direct questions like, would your NYPD arrest people if they stop ICE vans from leaving with detainees? And I'm not sure that's where the line should be, but I do know that most New Yorkers and most voters, if they stop and think about this, and they're finally getting forced to, want there to be some set of rules that are actually applied. And it's not just that my enemies are so bad, whether your enemies are the Free Palestine people or the Trump administration or whatever else, that, well, if it's them, the rules don't count anymore. And that is more and more openly, as a closing appeal, what Mamdani is offering. And I think this interview where he said the globalized intifada thing, he's gotten so high on his own supply, so used to getting nothing but like easy and loving press and people not stopping and thinking that hard about what he's saying and what the implications are. And it got so much credit for standing by his first convictions, and everyone else was pulling their punches. And he called it like he meant it and said, more is possible. And here we are, that this was the moment where it's not that there's some limit on what the left can do. I really don't think there is. I think they're doing tremendous political work. The mainstream Democrats have abandoned. The Republicans don't even try in New York and deserve credit for that, for organizing and trying. But at a certain point, they have some power and they have to actually account for their actions. This isn't just abstract. This guy could really be mayor. Wait, he said that? I don't know if I want that in a mayor. And I think a lot of people, even as they're seeing his closing ads and he has a lot of money to spend, which hasn't been the case for past farther left candidates the same way, are pausing and considering what some of the implications of his ideas are. And when you get past the poster, they're a lot to take in. And sometimes I think very different from how they sound when such a brilliant communicator is formulating them and only expressing what is most nice, most appealing, and most free about them.
Yeah, and I will just note, it was my colleague, Tim Miller, it was on the Bulwark podcast, who asked him whether or not language like globalize the intifada, whether or not that makes him uncomfortable. And that's when he, you know, I think he went through some sort of mealy mouth, but also he invoked himself the Holocaust Museum and said, well, they have this definition. Like, it was a pretty, like, mask-off moment, and Cuomo has jumped on it. And the Holocaust Museum has responded. Do you think it was a fatal error, him sort of saying that?
No, I think he's a very good communicator, smart candidate, and actually serious guy in some ways. I think it was a real error and one that a more experienced and small c, very small c, conservative politician would have avoided. I think he's gotten so much credit, and deservedly so, for showing up everywhere, taking difficult questions from skeptical audiences, and showing he can get through that. But he did not realize this is his first time going through this exercise. Like, he won a primary in like the farthest left assembly district, like the lower house of the state legislature in New York, like 5 years ago. Running citywide, talking to a national audience suddenly, these are big new things. And he's done a really impressive job with that. And I don't think he's learned like quite how to trim his sails. And this is the first time he's, you know, had the wind smack into those sails the wrong way. The boat starts shaking precariously and had to deal. And it's coming very late in the day. Early voting has started. I'd be very surprised if he makes more errors like that. But, you know, he says, my campaign proves I can do it. You know, they have. They've knocked on over a million doors. I see his volunteers everywhere. I talk to them. They're like smart people who aren't reading from a script. I tell them why I think they're wrong. And what I think, I'm not ranking him for these reasons. And I listen to what they have to say. So I don't think it was a fatal moment. I think it was a clarifying one for some people who've just been squinting or half paying attention. You're glancing at headlines. You're seeing half of an ad or catching a segment on TV. And like, this guy seems nice and pretty serious. And you're not catching an error in what he's saying really for the first time.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad Tim had him on and asked him that question because it was clarifying. And you know what? I'll just say as a point of personal privilege, my boy Tim's getting, people are mad. They're saying that he platformed this guy. And I'm like, he interviewed him. Like, Ben Shapiro platformed Candace Owens, right? That's different. Tim asked a question in an interview. Who is in the top two for mayor of New York? And so is quite newsworthy to ask a question of.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Anyway, there are several other candidates in this race, nearly all of them better than Cuomo and Mamdani, in my opinion, but it would take a big polling miss for one of them to break into the top two. But let's listen to some of the candidates people had on their minds besides Cuomo and Mamdani. Here are our honorable mentions that came up in the groups.
Brad Lander is an honorable mention. He got my second spot.
I was thinking of Adrian Adams. For me, it's between her and Sora.
I really like Brad Landers. That's who I think should be the mayor. He's definitely my number one. He has a lot of the similar policies as Mamdani, but he has the experience. He was the city controller. A lot of people are saying, oh, I would stand up to Trump. He's the only one who actually has. He's the one who caught Elon trying to take $80 million from New York's budget, and he's the one who got it back.
Lander is ranked first on my ballot. Stringer is second. He got a raw deal with the woman who accused him of sexual harassment. Both very principled and capable people. They're not tracking so far. In the reshuffling down ballot, could it change? I'm not sure. But it's interesting to me that somebody like Myrie got no attention, who has vastly more experience than Mamdani, and a record to prove it.
I did that test. Did you do that test, you guys? Like when you write what's important to you and it tells you who's your candidate. And I'm like either Zoran or Andrew, like I'm up on those two guys. And it came up with that boring guy. Well, I forgot. Well, I think you just said his name, but I just couldn't watch. I was falling asleep. But supposedly that guy is worth an honorable mention by me. Who? Brad Lander? Is he Lander. The really?
Brad like, Lander.
He's like dead walking. Yeah. And the thing is, he doesn't have a chance. But if you actually look at what he stands for, he's actually pretty great. He doesn't have a shot, but he's worth mentioning. So
the test that this last person was talking about was actually put out by your publication, right? We'll link to it in the show notes, but that's something you guys do, yeah?
Yeah, it's real fast. You say 15 of your views and you see which candidate's views. We ask them the same questions, matched up most closely with it. It's got bobbleheads, and a lot of people were surprised by their answers. This guy, Brad Lander, Brad came in thinking he was going to be where Mamdani is now. And they just crossed endorsed. This is the first time in our two ranked choice mayoral elections we've had a true cross endorsement. Last time around, Andrew Yang, who knew he wasn't going to win, endorsed Catherine Garcia, and she declined to return the favor. But Brad Lander and Zohran Mamdani just cross-endorsed each other.
And that means they're telling people to rank...
rank me one and rank this guy two. And don't rank Andrew at all.
Yeah, got it.
And this is tactical, and they were already sort of closely aligned. We'll see what this means. And Lander, as I mentioned earlier, is the leading Jewish candidate in the race. So that's interesting, and maybe lends protection to Mamdani. Maybe it hurts Lander. Really remains to be seen. Lander, as mentioned earlier, was just arrested by ICE, which wildly then claimed DHS that he'd assaulted the police officers, even though the whole thing's on film. I'm so old, I remember when the federal government didn't just make stuff up in random tweets and said, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? But this was there. But Brad, who's been a progressive stalwart throughout his political career, came to the New York editorial board in December, I believe, which is a collection of journalists that was interviewing these candidates. And the first thing he said out the bat, and he wanted to be first, was progressives got it wrong about crime. And that's when crime was definitely the top issue in the polls and all that. We need to do better. We've seen, we've heard. And then perversely, again, Eric Adams very belatedly getting around to doing something on crime rather than just trumpet improvements that no one in New York sees or believes, took the wind out of those sails. And that's part of what helped Mamdani pass him. And plainly, their politics are very similar. The Mamdanis are more ambitious. There's natural correspondence between them. And Brad is vastly more experienced. He's in a citywide office right now. You know, he's been in the political game for a long time. He ran big housing organizations before that. And he seems to have just sort of lost his shot. It seems like in some sense he's running now to maybe be first deputy mayor in a Mamdani administration. We'll see. The other ZM in the race, Zellner Myhre, who also came up there, is not that much older. I think he's 37. Right. But he's a third term state senator who's passed some impressive and ambitious legislation, including, by the way, getting New York early voting, which has started and is awesome. So you don't have to wait in a long line on election day. When it's supposed to be 100 degrees this year. You know, son of immigrants, black guy in Crown Heights, won office by beating an Eric Adams protege who was an incumbent, who was part of the IDC that helped Cuomo work with Republicans to foil Democrats back when he was governor. He's perfect on paper a whole number of ways. He's so bright. His plans are good. He's appealing. He can speak. He never launched at all. It was one of those chicken and egg things. He needed to show support, to get money, to build an operation, to get more support. This never came together. The attorney general, Andrew Cuomo, longtime enemy, Tish Gaines, also Donald Trump, longtime enemy, Queens guys again. You know, like sort of drafts Adrian Adams, who came up, the council speaker, extremely late. You got to run. And Adrian is very impressive on paper, but has never run citywide, right? She becomes the council speaker. That's a backdoor boss's and the council member's decision. You know, she's like, you should vote for me because I don't want the job. I won't bring scandal. And that's great in a head-to-head race against Eric Adams or Andrew Cuomo. I've done this. I know things. My values are decent. I'm not going to embarrass you. This isn't a head-to-head race. And what's crazy, and you hear it with your group, is the whole idea of ranked choice, which we only have, again, in primaries and special elections, which is jaw-droppingly stupid. But the whole idea is you don't have to choose between your head and your heart. That you have one vote, but five choices. And you can say the person you really like the most first, and it won't matter because your vote will transfer. So if I really like Zellner Myhre, I can put him first. And if I could live with Zohran Mamdani, but don't particularly like him, which is, he has a lot of enthusiasm. This isn't a ton of voters. You can put him fifth, and you know your vote will end up there. But instead, you can hear it with your group. These people who are registered Democrats who are going to vote in this contest, they want to pick a winner. Everyone loves a winner. It's very hard to get around that dynamic. And these other candidates seem like also rans and losers at this moment, and so does the Democratic establishment that they're all part of.
Yeah, for sure.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
I'm glad you brought up just like rank choice in general, because it has led to all these sort of side alliances in the race, like the one between Lander and Mamdani we were just talking about. But we heard very mixed views on ranked choice voting from the voters we talked to. And I think the upsides of it are pretty obvious. You can register an opinion about all of the candidates and not worry about wasting your vote, which is something I hear that frustrates voters all the time. But your point, it is so funny that they do it in the primary and not the general. But let's listen to what voters told us about the downsides of ranked choice voting, because they had a lot of feelings about the downsides.
I guess it's trying to come up with five candidates is this. I think there's probably two or three I'm actually like more interested in. And then like trying to think of like more after that just is a little bit too much.
I happen to hate ranked choice voting.
Me too.
Because I didn't understand the intricacies of it the first time around, although Adams was not my first choice. He ended up becoming the mayor of New York, and that's not happening again. So
I think it forces you into a situation where if you're not as knowledgeable about certain candidates, I think it sways you too easily and be influenced by others. I think the ranked voting, it adds a bit of confusion. And it forces people into making selections without necessarily being truly informed. So for me, you know, I know a lot about Cuomo, but does that mean that I really want him to be mayor, or is it because of familiarity and being knowledgeable? So I think it adds a bit of a confusion for me. So,
yeah, the first thing the mayor should do is get rid of it because I think it's a disaster. And it's also emblematic of what's wrong with the Democratic Party, which is it's chaos. It was presented as an option to be more representative of what people would want, but I think it has precisely the opposite effect.
So not a lot of love for ranked choice voting there. So what do you think, Harry? Is this the last time we're going to see ranked choice in New York?
It will, might be. Sarah, thanks a lot for having me on here. I love their thoughts there. I thought they were spot on. Last Daily News column, which is called NYC's Lousy Election Rules Create Lousy Choices. And the weird good news is that corrupt ex-cop, current mayor, Eric Adams, has a charter revision commission this year that he's appointed some fairly independent people to, who are considering a lot of stuff. And one of the things they're considering is finally getting nonpartisan primaries to New York that would, in effect, replace the current ranked choice rules for parties that are only open to registered voters. And you have to register way in advance in New York, by the way, with a system where you just have a two-round election, and then the top three candidates would compete in the general election, which would be massively healthier. One of the giant issues here in New York, and it's part of how Eric Adams ends up as mayor, is that the map has diverged from the territory. And a big reason why is the people who show up in low turnout Democratic primaries and in non-mayoral years and down ballot contests, but even in the mayoral contest, are not the same as the city at large. And you can see it in opinion polling. You can see it in how people react. And these are the people who checked out and maybe didn't vote for Trump, but also didn't vote for the Democrat. There's definitely some crossover between these groups. There have been previous efforts to get there, but this really could be the year. And that could be a truly transformative thing for New York. Well, we're talking about defending democracy. The big D Democrats are talking about defending democracy, the concept from this administration and so on, would create a city that is modeling its own good democracy. as opposed to a closed and somewhat corrupt one that just alienates people from the city's politics and its common civic life. So here's hoping we don't end up having a new version of this, oh God, these are the candidates conversation again in a few years for this reason.
Harry Siegel, you were fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We will be back next week for our season finale. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube, and become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com. We will see you guys soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.